could find my own direction. I used to feel like I was always in control, but now I'm happy just to let you be my guide, baby. Where you're headed is the way I wanna go. Yeah, end game's up, it all went out the window, baby. What can I say? I wouldn't want it any other way. Live and learn, and our love will last. Whatever I do is 100 times better with you.
And you're very welcome along to today's edition of Family.ie. I'm Ronan Johnston, and this is the final episode in our four-part series titled Prepare for a Great Wedding Day and an Even Better Life After. Last time, we heard from Peter and Fiona Perham of the Nazareth Family Institute, as well as a number of couples who've been making their marriages work for well over 15 years. Let's hear a few highlights of those conversations.
In a sense, the theatre of the day is detracting from probably the more substantial issues that might be addressed in the course of marriage preparation.
We could have done with the preparation, definitely, and how to deal.
See, for me, I didn't know how to love, so I knew, learned I was loved. I didn't know what love was.
Do you know, I don't think I would do anything differently.
Finance, sex and in-laws are the three great damagers to marriage.
You're listening to Family.ie. Have you ever looked at your spouse and wondered, what were they thinking? If so, stay tuned, because coming up after this quick break, Stephen Carty introduces us to a therapist. She'll help us determine if opposites really do attract, and if so, why do people who at one time were so attracted to each other before they were married start to drive each other absolutely mad a few years down the road together? So stay tuned for much more here on Family.ie. Welcome once again to Family.ie. So far, we've heard from a number of couples who exchanged their vows well over 15 years ago. I think it's really good for all of us to learn from each other because, as all of the couples indicated, life together can have some unexpected bends. If you're still in the planning stages for marriage, no matter how well you prepare, some of those twists and turns just can't be anticipated. But some things are actually predictable, especially when it comes to our brain chemistry and hormones. Let's think about some of those issues and discover some more keys to a great marriage and a great life. Over once again to Stephen Carty as he welcomes therapist Louise Ward.
Louise, would you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do?
I am a therapist. I work in general practice, really. I do a lot of couple work, but my caseload is quite varied. I think my youngest client is 9 years old and my oldest client is 76. And so I've quite a varied caseload. I have a BSc in counselling and psychotherapy, and I have a master's in cognitive behavioural therapy. And I think I've probably been doing courses since 1999. So I've done lots of different training courses in lots of areas.
So just to clarify, what is cognitive behaviour therapy?
Cognitive behavioural therapy is a specific type of therapy that will look at the way we think, you know, because how we think and what we believe about situations affects what we do. And so our thoughts and our feelings and our mood and our behavior are all interlinked depending on what we think. And so CBT, it's a much more focused type of therapy. It's much more directive and much more collaborative. So the client and the therapist will work quite collaboratively. A lot of homework. And it's quite short term. So it's not a long term type of therapy. It's much more short term.
Is it a case that sometimes opposites attract because you're sort of looking for that, you know, or you admire that about them? But when you're married and having to live with them, you know, after 5 years, that can really get under your skin.
I think what the research out there shows, or what they say at the moment, is that we're actually attracted to people who evoke in us similar feelings that we had in our grown-up years, you know, and nature actually drugs us, or oxytocin drugs us. And so usually we're attracted to somebody who's actually going to push all your buttons and drive you mad. But you can't see that, you know, and it's all unconscious. And so it's an incredible journey after that oxytocin buzz wears off, because the relationship and the journey and the longevity of the relationship can't happen while you're drugged. It's got to happen on the, you know, the phase of the relationship where you're relating to one another without drugs.
What about those differences between you and I that have caused this, you know, tensions arise, etc.? What do we do?
I think they can be the most wonderful opportunities for growth in a relationship, because usually when you're attracted to somebody, usually, as I said, they're incompatible to you. And the whole psychological basis or unconscious basis behind it is that what psychologists think is that we're attracted to them because they remind us of some of the wounding that happened in our grown-up years. Mm. And the idea is that, you know, they will unconsciously push your buttons and bring you to a place where you will deal with some of your wounding and you'll finish childhood and become a fully functioning adult. And so your relationship then will be adult to adult, not adult to child. Because often what we see, and often when I'm working with couples, I'll see them interacting together and I'll see a couple, you know, having a fight. And to me, it looks like one of them is 5 years old.
Yes.
You know, and it almost feels like they've thrown all their toys out of the pram and they're not playing anymore, you know.
Yes.
And it's like the adult and the child in them are relating together, not the adult and the adult.
Right.
And so it's like the buttons, you know, from a psychological point of view, it's like a frustration or something happens at this conscious level up here. But it has tentacles that go down to unconscious material
yeah.
in the grown-up years.
Mm.
And so that is what scientists think is why, or unconsciously what causes the attraction. You know, it's in the hope that the childhood wounds will be healed.
Given our Irish propensity to be sort of not only just self-deprecating, but maybe criticising others just as readily, the tendency maybe to not build one another up is a flaw in our psychological DNA, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is one of the big areas. You know, Gottman actually in his research over the years, you know, was asked lots of different questions by different people, and he said, "What makes couples happy?" You know, and he basically brought it down to this whole idea of fondness and admiration and, you know, positive regard for one another.
Mm.
You know, and that basically if their fondness and admiration outweighs their negative sentiment, their marriage will work.
Mm.
And he just brings it right down to that very basic, you know, principle that your fondness has to outweigh your negative sentiment. You know, that, and he doesn't say there isn't going to be negative sentiment, you know.
Yes.
There is going to be negative sentiment, but your positive stuff has got to outweigh it.
Louise, tell me a little bit about couples who are contemplating marriage. When we get married, we don't really know who we're marrying.
We don't know who we're marrying, you know. And the reason that we don't know who we're marrying is because in that early stage, you know, when you meet somebody and you fall in love, you know, you are attracted to them and you're not quite sure what that is, but you know it's chemical, you know. And when that happens, neurobiologists say that your brain begins to release this hormone into your system called oxytocin.
Mm.
And oxytocin, basically, it's a wonderful hormone.
Mm.
It's a bonding hormone. Mm. It's called the bonding hormone, the love hormone, the cuddle hormone. It's called lots of different things. But it basically bonds people together.
Yes.
And it's like glue. But it blinds you to your partner's negative traits.
Mm.
So when you're on your oxytocin buzz stage of the relationship, you cannot see negative traits. And so usually, I mean, they say it lasts between 18 months and 2 years.
Mm.
And after that, you're down to the power struggle. You're down to, you notice things then.
Yeah.
The things you didn't notice before, you begin to notice.
Mm.
You know, little irritations annoy you, where before you might have thought they're actually quite cute. You know?
Yes.
Now they drive you bonkers. And then it's the negotiating the relationship forward on the basis of choosing to love somebody. You know, so here's the hard work. I mean, I've had a vast array of couples over the years, you know, who would come for therapy for different reasons, you know. And I remember actually a lady wrote, I probably can talk about it because she wrote it on my website, you know, and gave me permission to publish it, but obviously won't tell you her name.
Mm.
But they came for therapy because they'd actually separated and they were living apart for quite a lot of months at this stage. They had two children. And so he came for therapy because he really wanted to tell his wife he didn't love her anymore.
He did or didn't?
He didn't love her anymore.
Yes.
And he wanted to end the marriage and he didn't want to go back. And she came, she wanted to come to therapy because she wanted to tell her children in years to come, "I really tried."
Yes.
And so they both came for very different reasons, you know. And so I began to work with them, and I began to use a very particular system of work with them where, you know, we looked at that space between them, what was in it, what were the wounds that were in it, what caused it to feel so dangerous and so poisonous. Mm. And gradually over, you know, a 6-week period, they began to move towards each other. Mm. And, you know, I remember I got a card off them that Christmas. They're back together. Our home is full of love and joy and happiness. And we are so, you know, grateful that we tried, you know. So there can be turnarounds in marriage. You know, if you can put your finger as a professional or as a therapist on what's caused the rift. And it's usually some, you know, something solvable. You know, it's usually something that there has been a gridlock on and they haven't been able to get over it.
Yeah.
And with a little bit of help and a little bit of, you know, encouragement and, you know, figuring out what the gridlock is, they can get over it, you know, and they can go on to have a wonderful marriage. Mm. So it's exciting. You know, usually what happens is it presents itself as a frustration. You know, this drives me mad about you.
Yeah.
You know, this really annoys me about you.
Yeah.
I can't cope with this anymore about you, you know. And when this happens, what you've got to do is you've got to look at the solvable things and you've got to look at the unsolvable things and you begin with the solvable things. You know, you begin to look at, okay, what can we solve here? What can we begin to deal with? You know, what are the, you know, what are the things? And like the usual things that come up for people are money problems, financial problems, dealing with bills, etc., children, sex, time apart, or maybe a lack of quality time together. You know, that would be a very big issue that would come up quite a lot. You know, these are areas of difficulty and conflict that come up that can be solved. You know, they've got to decide, okay, what are we going to do about these issues? And they develop a you know, okay, this is what we agree and this is my specific request that will be, you know, positive, specific and measurable, you know. So let's try this for a couple of weeks. Yeah. Let's do something about it. And what are we going to do? You know, so it's working together on a shared goal. Yeah. And it's very powerful if they go and get help and begin to integrate something different, you know, and they learn how to deal with all of the small issues in a different way.
Yeah.
And in a safe way, because usually people get into trouble and they begin arguing or fighting about something in particular, and usually it's a perpetual thing and they'd never really get anywhere with it. You know, it's something, it's an issue that comes up all the time. They're usually indications that they're not the solvable ones, and sometimes they have to park them. And it's known, being wise enough to kind of know the difference, you know. And yes, we are vastly different, and it's an absolute miracle how we actually get on, but we do.
So there you have it. The initial in love feeling seems like a powerful drug because, well, it is. And as with any substance, we need to know the potential side effects. Coming up after our final break, let's think about what happens when the effects of that love drug wear off. Stephen will introduce us to another marriage and family counsellor. She'll tell us about some practical steps couples can take to push through and keep growing toward a great marriage. So keep it tuned right here for more. And don't forget that we'd love to hear from you as well. Our text comment line is 086-251-6886 and email us with questions or comments anytime, radio@family.ie. Again, that's 086-251-6886 or radio@family.ie. Stay with us as we wrap up our series. Prepare for a great wedding day and an even better life after on today's edition of family.ie. Welcome to the final segment of today's edition of Family.ie. So far, we've thought primarily about the lead-up to the wedding day. Our hope is that couples plan for more than just the big day, but more about the many, many days afterwards. As we've heard so far, some issues in marriage often develop before the couple says, "I do." But people sometimes tend to think that things will change once they're married. And they do, but not always for the better. To help us think more about what it means to make marriage work, Stephen Cardy welcomes another marriage and family counsellor.
Well, I'm here today with Linda Wagner. Linda, you're really welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Just tell us who you are and what's your background. And
okay, Linda Wagner. I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, which everybody always hears in my accent. But I've been in Ireland for 31 years. And so everybody says I haven't lost my accent, but they didn't hear it when I first came. So I've been living in Dublin for and then into Swords for 30 years.
And you're a consultant in the counselling area. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
I came to Ireland not as a counselor, and when I was here, I came across a lot of people who were having problems, and I really didn't know of anyone to send people to for counseling at that time. So I went back to America and got my master's degree in counseling, and when I came back, the counseling took off, and since then, I've had my own private counseling practice. I counsel marriage counseling and personal problems, relationship problems, emotional problems. Also, I work with Mary Ann Steffi, and we have a counseling training center, and we train counselors.
Included in that, as you mentioned, Linda, is the counseling of couples, you know, and marriage. So tell us a little bit, what does it take to make marriage work?
That's a big question. Relationships are difficult, and they take a lot of work. And I think with marriages, there needs to be that commitment to each other. I think that there needs to be a willingness to be honest and to deal with stuff that comes up in our lives, to deal with things. And so many people avoid them because they're painful and they're risky. There needs to be trust, trusting each other. And for me, ultimately, trusting God with each other. And I think there needs to be a lot of forgiveness over and over and over again, and a willingness to go again. So I think sometimes we come in with expectations of marriage that we didn't even know we had, and I think they're very high expectations a lot of times. So it puts a lot of pressure on each other to meet some needs. So those are some of the things I think that need to be worked on.
And let's take a scenario where a couple, they may need the benefit of somebody like yourself to go and talk to. And there's probably a reluctance, generally probably more so for the man than the woman, to come and talk about that. Why would they feel that way? And why should they come to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, used to men were very reluctant to come for counseling. Women were the first ones to be willing. Now I find more men are willing, and which is great to see. Sometimes I ask them what takes more courage, staying home or coming for counseling, and they say counseling. I said, see, it's the stronger thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes we wonder, can talking to someone make any difference? Mm-hmm. And so they don't see how it could be beneficial or helpful. But in marriage relationships, a lot of times they get into patterns of how they relate to each other, and they come up with the same responses and the same defensiveness and the same arguments. And so sometimes talking with someone who's objective and outside of the relationship can help them to talk in ways they can't get past. They can't talk that way with each other.
Yes.
And so it can be really helpful for them to be able to hear each other in different ways. And I think it just shows such a love for one another and a wanting to work on a relationship. And I think it's such a positive, good thing, and takes a lot of courage to do.
Even if you're enjoying a good marriage and that marriage is going well, it's still worth your while doing a marriage course or getting input from an expert from the outside or helping you understand things that are going on that you didn't know that you didn't know or that might be in play in your marriage. Isn't that correct?
Oh, yeah. The more people put into it and the more work they put into it and into each other, it's going to benefit their marriage relationship. Even going and some of the courses or conferences you can go to, it helps each other to talk in different ways with each other and discover more things about each other. I think sometimes we think after we've been with somebody for a few years, we know them, but we don't ever know them. There's always more to them. And so I think they're very helpful to do those things.
Linda, imagine a scenario where there's a couple and one or other of them are reluctant to come and get help because it might, if they don't get the help, it might cost them the marriage ultimately if they leave things drift and fall apart eventually. What would you say to that couple? You know, why would they come for help?
Mm-hmm. I think I would suggest to them, come once. just come one time. No commitment, no obligation, nothing else after that. But come once and find out what it's like and see if you find it helpful, if you experience it and see. And I think sometimes that helps people get over the fear of the unknown and what's going to happen. And also of letting them realize you're not going to take sides. The counselor's not going to take sides. They want to help the relationship. And that's part of the duty of the counselor is not to choose sides and to take one side over another, but to help them to understand each other better there. So I would suggest they try it. And I find most people, when they try it, it's not what they thought it was going to be, and it's much more positive than they thought.
But let's say they've been to somebody, they might not be in a professional counselor like yourself or whatever, but they've been to somebody that they trust, and they're sort of saying, that didn't work, I'm reluctant to go.
And I wouldn't eliminate other professional counselors in that group, because all of us may have been trained in different models and who we are in ways and how we apply our counseling techniques and everything can be different. Our personalities are different. And so they may go to one counselor and that counselor really just doesn't suit them. But there could be another counselor that does. And so I would encourage them not to give up, but to find out how that counselor counsels, what is their objective in counseling, and maybe experience it once with them and see what that's like. But I think that sometimes people have to try more than once or twice.
That's a good word, Linda. And I think what we've been hearing through this series is that marriage is work, but it's worth it. You've been listening to Family.ie, and that was the fourth and final episode in our radio series, Prepare for a Great Wedding Day and an Even Better Life After. Time simply won't allow us to present all of the resources available, but we do hope you'll visit us at family.ie. There you'll find links to the various services and information mentioned on this series, along with audio downloads of this series free to listen to online or download for later. Simply click on the page for this radio program, Prepare for a Great Wedding Day and an Even Better Life After. While you're online, you might be interested in other topics we've covered, including discovering the learning style of your child.
You know, even if the doctor says, or your friends or your family or sister say, you're overreacting, or you're neurotic, or you're whatever, who cares? You know, you're going to get a label for a short time, but actually if something is picked up or not. And once those things are put in place, like the changes, the earlier it happens, the bigger the changes.
My finances, solid ground or sinking sand?
I think that many relationships very often were probably based on a social life, on income.
Yeah.
And now all of that is stripped away. The 4x4 is gone, the golf club membership is gone, all of this. And so you're paired back just to me and her, or
yes,
or her and him. And you're thrown back on actually the relationship, maybe for the first time.
And freedom from bullying.
We have this belief that bullies have low self-esteem. In reality, they have average to excessive self-esteem. Bullies bully not due to anger, but usually due to disdain and contempt toward other people. And disdain and contempt are both the language and the behavior of superiority. Your average bully believes they're superior to other people.
They have cognitive sort of empathy, but they don't have emotional empathy.
Yes.
So they know what hurts, but they don't care that it hurts.
Again, those programs and more at family.ie. And we really appreciate your partnership. Family.ie is a registered charity, and your financial support helps us continue to offer radio programs like this free of charge to help strengthen marriages and families across Ireland. We simply can't do it without you. So if you'd like to find out how you can partner with us, visit us online at www.family.ie. So on behalf of Stephen Cardy, Roger Basick and Anne-Marie Miles, I'm Ronan Johnston. Special thanks to Anne-Marie Maguire for her help behind the scenes, as well as the Willis Clan for the use of 100 Times Better for our theme song. Until next time, slán agus beannacliv gilleirt. Thank you for listening to Family.ie, helping families thrive.